hanging in there.
Afternoon. I'm opening a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Tuesday, April 11th, 2017. And ever so exciting here this time of year. We're a couple of late changes. So we're going to carry over House Bill 3335, and that'll be back to us on Thursday, the 13th of April. And House Bill 2864, also carried over to Thursday, the 13th. And then Rep. Reardon had this bill, House Bill 3003. We're going to bring that back in about a year.
He must have got a fiscal on that.
Which one?
Anyway.
Oh, is it going to be?
And actually, I want to turn this over, right? I'm going to turn the gavel over to Rep. Alonzo Leon.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't need anything, right?
This one? Yes.
Oh,
okay.
I don't feel good.
Are you serious?
Just wait till.
Okay.
You're gonna.
Act bill should be. Oh, we're carrying that over.
All right, check it.
3289 is.
You carried over the summary.
You didn't say that. No.
Oh, okay.
3335 and 2864. Were the two that were carried over.
I am opening a public hearing on House Bill 3437. Representative Reardon, you're on.
Thank you, Chair. Alonzo Leon, members of the committee. I'm really pleased to be able to present this bill to you today, and this is a product of several months of hard work and conversations with stakeholders about our workforce system. And if you like what you hear today, I'm going to hope that you'll go to OLIS and actually sign on in support of House Bill 3437. You hopefully recall that we had a week of informational hearings back in February where we heard from many of the key agencies engaged in workforce development, the HEC, the Employment Department, DHS, Commission for the Blind, Bureau of Labor and Industries, about what piece of the workforce puzzle they do and what services they provide in this complex system. We heard about the Oregon Employment Department's research folks who told us about how Oregon has seen full-throttle job growth this past year, and we've been adding jobs faster than any other state in the country over the last year. They told us growth has been occurring in all regions, especially in Central Oregon, and about how jobs are being added in higher, middle, and lower income paying industries, and that certain sectors like healthcare are seeing explosive growth. They also shared that there were 50,751 job vacancies in 2016. The vast majority were permanent, full-time, good jobs. I think, could we put the chart up, actually? Since I just talked through all of this, but members, you have that excellent illustration in front of you anyway, so for the audience's viewing pleasure. We also heard from the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, our state board that currently oversees the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA, and about implementation. We heard from three of the nine local workforce boards in Oregon that dynamic presentation about business sector-driven strategies and partnerships in the Bend area and Columbia River Gorge, the Rogue Region, and East Portland Metro. This is where a lot of the local innovation is happening, connecting businesses with the workforce. And we heard directly from owners of manufacturing, construction, food processing, and wood products businesses that were struggling to find qualified people, particularly in the trades. High growth industries are changing quickly, needs for industry-specific skills are changing, and the existing workforce is aging. So, this is the chart that our LPRO, Laura Kesman, has been working on. It's pretty awesome, pretty visual. Gives an idea of how complicated our workforce system really is and how hard it is to know who's doing what. See, Rep. Wisman is not with us, but he asked during our hearings about the Youth Development Council. Where do they fit in? Rep. Solman, you ask about Chambers of Commerce and businesses. Where are they represented? I'm sorry, but which are represented by the B's on this chart. Rep. Alonzo Leon, you asked about WorkSource Center, their locations around the state, and how they were connected to the other planning entities, businesses, and agencies. It's also not always easy to know how all of these entities, which sometimes seem siloed, are working together, and ultimately whether we are moving towards outcomes we want to see for Oregonians and Oregon businesses. Out of the February hearings, we compiled a list of everyone's recommendations and input, which you have in front of you, and that used that information to create the bill before each day, House Bill 3431. The number one piece of feedback from all stakeholders was a need for a statewide approach to effective, integrated workforce development. We also consulted with Colorado, who's been a leader in thoughtful, integrated workforce planning and incorporated many of their ideas into this legislation. We also took into account that the Oregon Talent Council was sadly no longer being funded in the governor's budget for the upcoming biennium, eliminating the guts of its functions. House Bill 3437 is a simple bill that rebrands the Oregon Workforce Investment Board as the Workforce Investment and Talent Development Commission, as shown on the chart. Combining the OIB's federal WIOA work, the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act work, with the Oregon Talent Council's talent development efforts. So really, the bill just does two concrete things. One, it convenes all of these entities on the chart at one table, and so they can talk about how to bridge the connection between employers who aren't able to fill jobs and a workforce that wants jobs. And the second thing it does, it requires that the group produce and biennially update a single unified state strategic plan, the Workforce Investment and Talent Development Plan. And that will identify the education, training, and apprenticeship systems needed to support current businesses and to support emerging industries that may develop in the next 5, 10, or 20 years. This plan would consist of the existing OIB, WIOA Strategic Plan, and the Oregon Talent Council's Talent Development Plan, so just merging those two plans. And what's great about this bill is that it essentially supports work that's already happening. Agencies are already doing the work. There just isn't a common lens to communicate and to align the goals of the state. This bill doesn't require the agencies to do anything extra. It's not another OEIB, Oregon Education Investment Board. I want to make that very clear. Earlier this session, one of my workforce advisors commented, quote, "Right now it's like we're in a cloud, blindly making uncoordinated decisions that aren't always based on sound information," unquote. If passed into law, there would be a transparent, centralized team that ensured that all of the right players were sitting at the table, making coordinated, forward-thinking recommendations for our state's workforce system. A very simple concept. This would make a big difference in Oregon. I'd like to acknowledge and thank everyone that has been involved in this effort, including this committee that listened to all those presentations, and for the hard work that went into the final polishing of the bill, even last weekend, with Karen Hummelbaugh, Todd Nell, Alana Pertle-Gurney, and Laura Kentness. There will be a dash amendment ready in time for the work session on this bill. I promise you, I'm reviewing the draft right now. It's looking great. And I'm going to invite up Frank Wall from OIB and Arda
and Todd Nell.
Okay. Did you have any questions of me before I find out, or should I just stay up here?
Representative Bynum has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Reardon, I just wanted to acknowledge that this is one of the most beautiful charts I have ever seen. And I really wanted to just take the opportunity to acknowledge the hard work that went into this.
I appreciate it.
And I also feel it's important that we make sure that when people put this kind of effort into a job that they are adequately acknowledged. So, Laura, thank you for all that you've done. And you win the award for best chart of the session.
Yes, yeah. She does.
I'm sure the whole committee finds this very helpful. So just wanted to say thank you out loud.
And thank you for that. And I would acknowledge that also took a lot of people on the other side of that chart, including folks that are in the audience and from different agencies also doing a review process. So it went back and forth many times. But, yes, Laura was the genius behind this. So thank you.
Thank you to those who were cooperative in the group. So.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I wonder if the plan that you have in the talent development plan could also include analysis of obstacles that the state places in the way of job creation and employment and so forth. I mean, a lot of times I think the state inadvertently does place roadblocks in various ways.
Yeah.
In front of job
Rep. Alonzo Leon, Rep. Johnson, or Chair, I guess now, Alonzo Leon, how does that work? I think that would be a natural outcome of this of these discussions is absolutely looking at the obstacles and the opportunities. And what I think the beauty of is as people are identifying and working on the same problems, trying to promote the same industries as we go forth. And I think that's where the real power is the unity of the vision. And so absolutely anybody knows that looking at the obstacles is critical.
Thank you. Rep. Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, am very excited about this. And I noticed that ODE is part of this beautiful chart as well. And I just wonder if, like, how can we make sure that we are getting all this valuable information of all these folks that are going to be part of this roundtable, part of this discussion that's going to be happening, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So and how do we get that information to schools to be able to say, this is what your folks of industry have just shared with you as to what we're needing for our CTE programs, for our vocational training, so that we can make sure, because I'm super excited about this, too.
I think it's a natural connection between, you're going to have higher ed workforce, K-12 system, everybody at that table, and so they will be able to look at, let's say, the example I like to use, if it's healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're talking about healthcare as one of the industries we want to promote in the state.
Yep.
Well, what career paths do you need for healthcare? What curriculum do you need within each one of those career paths? And so they can start to break that down and, again, create that more unified vision. And it's not like we're telling them what to do. We're giving them a venue of cooperation, and I think that's the beauty of it.
Follow up. It's also just giving them, the other folks, the resource.
Yeah.
You know, giving the school districts that resource to be able to tap into that information. So I just think this is great work. Thank you so much for all the...
I forgot the Chair Rep. Solomon part. I thought about this the other day. I was thinking about when we had the gentleman come in and talk about people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wouldn't that be a great opportunity for these folks at that table to have a discussion about people with disabilities and how does that look across our entire system? So that's just one idea of how that might play itself out. So we have people who know a lot more than I do than they're sitting behind me.
Thank you, Representative Reardon. I just want to make a quick comment. I just want to echo what folks have said here in respect to – I'm a visual learner, so this is a really helpful visual to see how, and you indicated this, that it's a very complicated system. And I think in the past, all these agencies have worked in silos, independent from each other. And the fact that your bill is really encouraging working together across all agencies, and I know some of them are working on it right now, but really looking at the big picture and how it's going to impact our entire community, I think it's really exciting as well. So just
want to
say that.
If I may make one comment. I invited you early on. I said, if you like it, please sign on. I know this bill has my name on it. I had to use one of my priority bills. I view this work as our work as a committee. And I would encourage each of you to sign on to that and be a full partner in whatever blame or glory we get going forward. So.
Thank you. And if we could have just to have Todd Nell and Wallace Corwin, please join us. And just please state your names for the record.
Wallace Dale Corwin.
Todd Nell.
Thank you. Whoever wants to start.
Okay. Chair Reardon and members of the committee, my name is Todd Nell. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. I'm here today testifying because Frank Wall was unable to make it at a last-minute request, because originally Ken Madden had planned on being here, and an important emergency surfaced with Ken and his business, and he really wanted to be here. He apologizes to you, Chair Reardon, and all the members of the committee, and he's asked me to read his testimony on his behalf.
Thank you.
The Oregon Workforce Investment Board plays an important role in supporting business and industry needs through advising the governor on workforce policy and plans and contributing to the economic success of Oregon. As many of you may know, the board accomplishes this work through aligning policy and resources across the workforce system through our strategic plan. The board also promotes a proactive and innovative talent development system and is charged with holding the public workforce system accountable. Under WIOA, the Oregon Workforce Investment Board continues to improve our collective efforts as a workforce system to identify industry trends and related talent needs. However, many businesses still struggle to be as competitive and as successful as they would otherwise be because they cannot find the skilled employees that they need. If a company doesn't have access to a skilled workforce, costs can increase, they may grow more slowly, workers' wages may stagnate, and employees may leave our communities and our state, for that matter, for other opportunities. The Talent Council was established to advise and be a resource for state agencies and educational institutions on issues of talent development and to promote the growth and competitiveness of Oregon's traded sector and high-growth industries. It's about Oregonians being the first and best choice for Oregon employers. The Talent Plan is a resource to help unite state agencies, education, and training partners around a shared set of aspirations and actions to address Oregon's critical gaps in professional and technical occupations. The goal of OWIB's strategic plan is to create a roadmap for the workforce system to capitalize on its strengths, identify and address obstacles, and promote continuous improvement. Improvement of services through actionable recommendations and guidance. So separate, these plans are critical and formidable. Combined, they become transformational. Integrating and consolidating the work of the talent plan into the OWIB helps to create a more focused and strategic direction and a more coordinated effort that will help the workforce system realize efficiency, improve our effectiveness, and have increased impact. Our new economy and the required skill sets for workers is about many, many things. It's about the integration of applied skills, work-based learning, just-in-time training, formal degrees and certificates, and importantly, soft skills. Individuals with the right mix and with the right job are valuable and more readily employable in Oregon's communities. Applied skills such as project management, teamwork, diagnostic thinking, and problem solving are critical. Skills that help a person come up to speed quickly and that set them apart from others are also significant factors for success. Remaining competitive by continually learning new skills and technologies is crucial. Integrating and aligning OWIB's strategic plan and the Oregon Talent Plan will help the OWIB to provide improved guidance on strategies and goals. It will help bring to the table improved connectivity and alignment of resources for the local workforce development boards, as they implement the great work that they do through their local plans all across Oregon. Companies have fewer resources for training programs, yet they need them more than ever. Focusing on agile systems, transformative strategies, and unifying policies has the potential to significantly reduce the time that it takes for workers to contribute in a meaningful way. Ultimately, this means that employers, businesses, and employees in Oregon are better positioned and equipped to compete and be successful in our good state and in the global marketplace. That concludes my testimony. Sorry, Ken's testimony.
Thank you. Committee members, do you have any questions? Okay. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Mr. Cornwin?
Yes. Chairman Reardon and panel. I'm Wallace D. Corwin. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm a corporate manager for product integrity and innovation for Geldwin, Inc., and I'm the president and director of one of their wholly owned subsidiaries, Geldwin Door Replacement Systems, Inc. Although today I'm not representing the company, I'm also on the executive board and am the secretary treasurer of the East Cascades Workforce Board. I've just spent 2 years as the chair of the Bend Economic Development Advisory Board. And my family homesteaded here 135 years ago in Central Oregon, so I'm a fourth generation Central Oregonian with a fifth generation son and grandkids, sixth generation. In that time, I've been very, very lucky to see how rural Oregon has developed over the years and the challenges that it presents to the rural Oregon as compared to more metropolitan areas. Bend is that unique entity that's done well. But that's not what we generally see in the rural areas of Oregon. I would tell you at this point in time, rural Oregon, from the workforce perspective, is facing an uphill battle. Amazon and some of these types of delivery systems are taking away our brick-and-mortar stores, artificial intelligence, machine manufacturing, and those types of technologies, artificial intelligence, especially in the white-collar field and the CNC technology in the blue-collar field, are reducing what we'd call the standard high-end white-collar and blue-collar workforce jobs that are going to be available. And we're losing talent in a lot of the rural areas as children grow up and go to school. They don't come back because the jobs are not there for them to bring those back. So we have a talent drain that is definitely affecting rural Oregon. So from my perspective, knowing that and running an innovation center that is charged with introducing new technology into manufacturing, I think it's a critical time for the state, especially rural Oregon. They'll see it's faster and probably be harder hit than the metropolitan areas. Given that, I would like to propose that we amend the bill, Representative Reardon, just to make sure that we still have focus on rural versus metropolitan. I think it's critical that we focus and understand that this cannot be a metropolitan-driven system, that what works in a metropolitan area may or may not work in a rural area. As an example, I was talking to the state economist yesterday for Central Oregon. He was talking about a 500 possibility of a business moving into the metropolitan area, 500 well-paid jobs. That's great. But in Gilliam County, a business providing 15 high-paid jobs would have more effect on the economy than the 500 jobs in the Portland area. And I think we cannot lose focus on that as we go forward. So I've sent in my written testimony. Two changes, very minor. One, make sure that we understand as we go through this system, and I support this bill wholly, and I'll tell you why in a second, but making sure that we identify the rural areas and making sure that as this group coalesces and goes forward, that we make sure that we're listening to those areas as we tend to grow. I said the other day, my grandfather would probably think I was crazy if I told him that Shanico and Ashwood were ghost towns today, because at the time they came and settled this region, that was the economic drivers of those areas. So two changes there. Why do I support the bill? Very realistically, as we've struggled through as a workforce board trying to engage business and bring this thing together, which was a very large task, by the way. I had an old childhood roommate a schoolmate that rode the bus with me to school in Redmond. He asked me if I would just come over and sit on a board for a little while. There was nothing really to it. That was 2.5 years ago. I don't know how much time I spent, but that teaches me for saying yes to an old schoolmate, I guess. One of the reasons is the workforce system in itself today really doesn't address the second part that this bill does. The workforce system is really a way to send people through an agency on a 40, 50-year-old theory that it is an employment agency, not a workforce development agency. And so we can see that in two statistics that have come out lately. I get one that says, look how good we are as a workforce board, look how many people we've trained and placed. And the second one says we have 89,000 jobs or job seekers out there and 59,000 jobs that can't be filled. Mm-hmm. So we're not completing the second part of the piece, which is the training needed to get the jobs that are coming up in the next few years. So it's absolutely important that the workforce system, one-stop centers, and talent development get together and figure out how we're going to provide that training, remembering that the lifetime of a job in the future is probably 5 to 7 years without retraining. That's another thing that we have to look at in the future. So all of these things point to the fact that it's got to be more than a workforce board. It also has to have talent development mixed in. And
Mr. Corwin,
along those lines.
My apologies. I have Representative Bynum who has a question for you. Yep. Or a comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your service on the board. I'm curious because I happen to represent rural-ish and urban areas. I'm trying to understand what barriers, for instance, the state legislature can remove for rural Oregon, and what things we can do to make you more attractive, you meaning rural Oregon, more attractive for businesses who may want to locate here.
I think one of the main things is we have to understand that we're working in rural areas on small scales.
Small
scale development. So in a larger area, you can put resources, train 1,000 people. In a rural area, we're having to look at maybe training very short term, very diverse training for very small numbers of people. So we need to be able to generate those training courses fast, and we have to be able to devote the resources it needs. Administratively, it costs more in the rural area than it does in metropolitan.
Thank you. Mr. Corwin, did you have more to your presentation?
Nope. Okay. Nope. That
excellent.
Should do it.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Do we have anyone from the public who would like to testify on this bill? None. I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 3437. Thank you.
Thank you both for coming over.
Thank you.
Especially you, Mr. Wallace, for... Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2929. I'd like to invite Rep. Rehfield to join us to give the committee a reminder of the contents of this bill. We heard a little bit about it before. And create an opportunity, really, for the committee to have a discussion about the various programs. There were several. And go in a little more detail, and we'll see what happens after that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair Reardon. For the record, Dan Rayfield, House District 16. So we come back to you with House Bill 2929, which has a whole host of options to potentially relieve student debt, kind of as we look at the beginning part, incentivizing early savings all the way into improving counseling in the middle stage, and then on the back end, incentivizing repaying. I have spoken with Chair Reardon personally about this bill. I have some reservations even bringing a bill like this in the budget times that we're currently at, and if we were unable to find new revenue, I would probably vote to kill my own bill on this, given the type of drastic cuts that we're looking at making in our human services section. But with that, with the optimism that I have that we are all going to come together to find some revenue package, I do believe that it is in the best interest of the state to invest to alleviate some of the burden of student debt, which is what this bill is about. And so my recommendation would be to move it to revenue where it can sit there, and then we can fine-tune however much money we want to invest into this problem. And what I wanted to do is give you, and at the direction of the chair, give you a little bit of guidance in terms of the elements that I think are most appropriate under the circumstances, and kind of think about them in prioritization. There are three elements that I would probably put at the bottom end of where I would look to excise or remove. That would be the college counseling, and that would be a tough thing to administer and get moving. And then there is creating a student loan refinancing guarantee program. While that actually is fairly on solid ground in terms of the policy behind it, because it's modeled after a small loan caps program that we already have in existence, I think those are some of the more costly elements as we look at kind of the full plan. I would probably prioritize the early savings elements of this bill, which are, there is a document, and I'm actually referencing a document that was put online and that was also passed out, where it talks about incentivize early savings. The first one is on a refundable tax credit, which is means tested, of $100 for individuals contributing to a sales to a college savings plan. Then we also have this B on the incentivizing early savings would actually not cost anything. Option B is kind of the one option in this bill where Representative Reardon and I had talked where we could remove absolutely everything out of this bill, and this is the one thing that we could pass on the floor without a fiscal. This one essentially exempts the payments into a college savings account as being contributed as assets or income. So non-traditional savers will not be penalized for putting money into 529 accounts. And then you have the C, which is establishing a $100 tax credit for employers who contribute into an employee's college savings plan. And then D, which out of the early college savings, this is the one I would probably prioritize least, which increases the deduction amount from $2,000 to $4,000. Another interesting component of this I would actually think is, you know, means testing the 529 accounts is something that should also be considered, and is I'm getting some heads saying no, but that is something that I know is at least an active conversation, so I wanted to mention that in this space. Then in terms of assisting student loan repayment, one of them right now is modeled after the federal student loan interest deduction. There is a $2,500 student interest deduction. When you get married, this does not double. It's kind of an interesting situation. So you can have two teachers that have $60,000 of debt. They get married together. They're still stuck with the $2,500 deduction. This has not been adjusted for inflation for over 25 plus years. So this would create a state deduction. This is something that I worked on in the 2015 legislative session. So this is just kind of putting that in that would stack on top. Again, this is means tested, just like the federal deduction. And then the other one that I thought was kind of a creative idea, which is just like you have a 401k where you can put pre-tax money into a 401k account, giving businesses another way to extend the value of a dollar by allowing them to put in pre-tax money to pay down the principal of someone's debt, which wouldn't be counted as income for that individual as well. And so that's what option B is, and we already talked about option C is something that I would probably remove from the list if I were prioritizing. So, and Chair Reardon, I think I was trying to get at what you want me to talk to. Is there, if there's anything else, I'd be happy to answer all questions. We did prepare two amendments that are not posted. One amendment, which was initially what Chair Reardon and myself were talking about, does remove all of the elements that cost money and is just the policy. The second amendment that we did prepare removes, and I should say my good legislative assistant here, Tony Lapiz, he prepared them, that does remove the exit counseling, like I referenced at the beginning, as well as the student loan refinancing guarantee program. Eventually, I do think we should go look at how we can reduce interest rates for, you know, private loans. This just probably isn't the time to do that.
So a lot to digest, to say the least. And I was hoping to get some discussion, level of interest in from the committee and see how you feel about going forward on things. Obviously, the no-cost one's pretty attractive. So I'll just open it up. Any questions? Oh, and my intent, by the way, is to have a listening session here today with the intent of carrying it over so that Rep. Rayfield can go do wonderful things and respond to your thoughts. So that's in the amount of time we have available. With that, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your work on this. It certainly is a important topic. So just to be clear, you would then remove the references to the HEC convening a student debt planning or program for counseling and so forth. That would be removed.
Yeah, Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, if we were to go forward, I do believe that counseling is important, but the one amendment we do have removes the counseling component as well as the
yeah, that
prepayment.
Would be under their purview, but that's fine. I guess the other question I would have is that, you know, I'm sure you're aware that there are other efforts within the building, and I frankly have no idea where those legislative vehicles are, but talking about, the deduction just on interest and or deduction of interest and principal on the individual tax return and so forth that, you know, are a little simpler instead of as many components as this. So I just wondered your input on that. Are you tracking some of those efforts too? And do you see those being collaborative or, you know, facilitating the work you're involved in? I think there's multiple members working towards the same outcome, I think.
Right. Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, absolutely. There are several members. I think there was an article recently about something going on in the Senate. This is something we've been working on for quite a long time. We wanted to provide a comprehensive package about how do we attack student debt. I mean, and I think we all would recognize that the student debt is really a symptom of the underlying problem of not funding higher education where we need to fund it. But with that said, a lot of them are complementary. As we look at them, I think, putting them all in one location and then kind of hashing out what is the best step as a combined body moving forward. And I think the Revenue Committee probably makes the most sense because it is, you know, they will have these conversations about tax credits and deductions towards the end of the session if we as a body wanted to invest in this given our current budget times.
Yeah, please.
I guess help me understand your rationale on means testing and the thresholds that you put in there based on what occupations, jobs, degrees, you know, what were you considering as you put in those thresholds?
Absolutely. Chair Reardon, Representative Johnson, kind of give you what my role, where I've been in a cuts budget situation. I've been holed up over quite some time, looking at the various 15% reduction options in, like, our human services area, whether it's reducing ERDC, TANF benefits for folks. Part of my mindset has been coming into this session is how do we most efficiently use the dollars that we have? And part of that is if someone has has the ability to potentially pay to go to college, or if they have, you know, has a, the family resources to do that. In a perfect world, we would treat everybody, you know, equally. But when we are forced with, you know, what's the highest and best use of one single dollar, what we did with these various options were to put in means testing to focus on, you know, for instance, non-traditional savers in the early savings side. And trying to put in different type of mechanisms that will give them the leverage to kind of move forward into these types of accounts. And so that's why we did it, in trying to be as judicious as we can with our general fund.
Rep. Fulman's ahead of you.
Thank you, Chair. I sincerely appreciate the work that's put into this, because I can tell you personally, as a parent of two teachers in the family, there is great concerns when you're looking at the amount of student debt that, that they both carry, and requirements to have masters. So I appreciate this conversation, and I understand, and I also appreciate your ideal. You're looking at this saying, I realize what kind of budget situation we're in, so let's look at, see where we can work to make a difference. And I addressed some of my questions to you on some of the ones where you had talked about the employers. And I said, well, I was a little concerned, like, how does that affect if Uncle Mike wants to help nephew Johnny, who works for him? And, you know, I appreciate that you were, like, saying, okay, there is an obvious protection in there, that it can't be an affiliated, you know, family member. And also about the tax credit. And there was caps placed onto that, of just how much of the, not the credit, deduction. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And, you know, when we're hearing media coverage and conversations, like I think I just heard on the radio, when people are saying, I have such high student debt, I can't even think about putting a house, you know, putting a down payment on a house. So I appreciate looking at those ways. And when you talk about college counseling and the idea of possibly taking that out because it is a, could be a constraint on a budget, gosh, there really does need to be something done there, because I can tell you, as a lens of the teachers, there are so many things that that they can look into to reduce that college debt. Speaking from the, you know, my children, but they have to find out about it from different means. Somebody telling somebody. Do you realize that if you work here, you could do this? This could reduce some of your student debt. So there has to be some means that we can do to put together that really says, if you're graduating with a teacher certificate, you know, here is this template of information of places that you can do, things that you can do to reduce your debt. So that college counseling part, I think, is really critical when we're trying to help people alleviate themselves of, you know, ways that they can save themselves money. So, again, I just wanted to say I really appreciate the work on this, because I can tell you this is straddling so many people across this nation, let alone, and we're talking rural, we're talking urban, it doesn't matter, so...
And Chair Rudin, Representative Solomon, I think one of the thank you for the comments. I think, you know, part of my interest in this was born out of the fact of, you know, part of my generation coming out of college with a higher student loan debt, which has impacted the way that people choose to live, or they're not even choose at times, the way that they do live their lives. Whether it's, you know, personally, when I came out of college, I had over $140,000 in student loan debt, you know, and lived in a studio for 4 years. You know, and there is just different ways that people have been able to approach this that impacts the way that you've planned for your family, that impacts home ownership. It, quite frankly, it impacts the way you save for retirement, consumer spending. I mean, these things do trickle out. So I think that's part of the, you know, the passion behind, you know, trying to find more of a comprehensive approach to how do we address some of this. So.
Thank you. Yeah, Rep. Pointer.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yep. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rayfield, for bringing this forward. I think the conversation is very important to have. I want to go back to Representative Johnson's question about means testing, and I want to throw out this term, marginal utility of income. So $25,000 to $50,000, I want to know if there was, I suspect that that value is too low. I'll put that there. And so my question is, did you analyze household spending and how a person making $25,000 would ever stand a chance of putting $1 aside for anything more than basic needs, especially given the housing crisis and what we're going through and how much people are having to put towards just basic needs? So,
Chair Ridden, Representative Bynum, the way that we came to these numbers, we have talked with LRO in terms of how did they come to their estimates and looking at, like, their estimated impact population. There's no magic way for us to exactly be able to tell with the resources that we have at least available to us in our office, you know, specifically where this is. What we would do, a lot of these, we put sideboards on a lot of the proposals to, first of all, minimize the fiscal initially. And what we would do is move something to revenue at that point, and then from a policy decision, if we decided that we as the legislative body wanted to allocate $20 million, what we would do in the revenue committee is then adjust the sideboards to meet how much we wanted to invest into this, into the problem of student debt, into these various solutions. So, for instance, right now, the refundable tax credit, for instance, under the incentivizer, we say that's $5.8 million would be is the estimate in theory of the revenue impact that it would take away from state general fund. What we would want to do is in the revenue committee, we would then adjust those sideboards accordingly. And so the sideboards that we have on here are merely preliminary in terms of where we go. And again, I mean, this is a very painful conversation to have in terms of what we're going to be doing with the budget. And so it's slightly presumptuous, even moving at the revenue. I mean, just be very, candid. But those are things that we would suss out and determine, because I actually agree with you entirely with what you said.
Thank you. Questions? Yeah. It's really tough. I'm really glad you brought it to us. I maybe like to have had longer to really think about it and work through it. It seemed like the incentivizing early savings is really a positive thing to do, because we know that once a student or their parent starts saving, that increases dramatically. And I don't remember the exact stats, but there's a dramatic increase on whether or not they continue their education. So we know that works. On the other hand, we do the loan repayment. That's helping people that are through school and might need to buy that car or pay that high rent on their apartment or buy that first home. So it's sort of more almost like economic development part. So I'm not getting a real clear sense here personally on what we want to do. I'm thinking of doodle polls and things like that. This is tough. So how do we what kind of advice would we give this gentleman?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to talk, member to member, and as a member of the Revenue Committee, to have this bill in its current fashion show up in the committee would be pretty confusing. I can just see our good chair trying to wrap his mind around the various components here. So I would say if anything gets forwarded, it probably should be a reduced menu like you're talking. It could be more targeted. But I think also with the eye towards trying to align efforts, as I said earlier, with other members in the building that are trying to work on the same issue and what could be salvaged or put together that, would be of there's only going to be one effort, I'm pretty confident, that comes out of, this whole building. So what could we do to, support each other or to marshal efforts together? And I don't know what that exactly that is, but in its current form, I think if it showed up in revenue, it would be a fairly confusing piece, obviously.
And I totally agree, and I'm sure Representative Rayfield agrees, and that's why we wanted to have this discussion. And it is just that, as a discussion, is how do we do that, knowing that there may be no revenue.
In Chair Reardon, what we can do is work up an amendment to reduce. So we've already got the reduction of the two options. I think that one that would make sense to reduce, as well as some of the more complicated ones that probably will not get traction, which would be the deduction for employers to pay on the principal. While I really like that, there's a couple of things on the employer side that would create some additional issues, and we could take those out at least right now and then focus on the more traditional types of credits and deductions, and then move a more simplified bill at that point, which will then have the full suite of options for the Revenue Committee to consider.
Well, I hope this is... Oh, Rep. Froman?
Oh, no, sorry, I was pointing.
Oh, Rep. Alonzo, Leon.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Rayfield, I also appreciate the work that goes into this. And having worked in education pretty much my entire career, I know that early savings is really important, and understanding why it's important to prepare for your education. When you are in a position of not being able to save, but in a position to take out your loans, then figuring out how you can pay those loans back. So it's an easy identifiable issue, but complicated to address. If we had money, right, we would have a comprehensive program and absolutely include making sure that there's financial literacy involved along with this bill, because I think financial literacy is really critical. People take out loans, and sometimes if we don't have that background or training, sometimes we get ourselves in more financial pickles. So, this is a tough one, but situation on, with the bigger picture of financing being our kind of opponent or our nemesis. I don't know how we can.
We're challenged.
We're challenged, yeah.
So, any other closing thoughts, sir? Has this been helpful?
I think you and I can chat offline and then come together with a good plan and go from there on the conversation. And I also, thank you for keeping Representative Wisnett in check. Normally he tends to dominate conversations like this.
It's not easy.
All right, muzzle.
Thank you for your dedication to helping students. That's really critical work. So I wish we could do more.
We still can.
Rep. Johnson on that Revenue Committee would
we're ready.
Take care of that.
In film.
Okay, what are we doing? We're closing something here, aren't we? Carrying over, yeah. Okay, I am going to carry over House Bill 2929 in anticipation of great things. And, okay, moving right along. Opening a work session on House Bill 3289. Laura, please provide committee with a brief summary of the bill.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3289 would establish a task force on competency-based education. There is a -2 amendment that replaces that measure. It requires the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to submit an annual report to interim committees of the Legislative Assembly rather than to establish a task force that identifies progress made in providing competency-based education in public post-secondary institutions of education in Oregon. There is no revenue impact, it has minimal fiscal impact, and there is a referral. There is a rescinding of the referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee due to the transition from a task force to a report.
So we save time, save money, and effort. Okay.
Chair Reardon, I move to adopt the -2 amendment dated 4/3/2017.
Senator, I'm reading. Being late. Representative Alonzo Leon moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated 4/3/2017. Any discussion? Okay. Any objection? If not, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Reardon, I move 3289 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Alonzo Leon moves House Bill 3289 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Any discussion?
Real quick.
Co-chair Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick, thank the chair, the committee, and Laura, and the HEC. You know, we have this process. When we can't pass a bill, we do a task force or work group or report, and this is the furthest down with the least burden on the people we're asking to do this. I appreciate them doing it. But I think I'm glad we're doing this. I think I did the same thing last year on the poverty, students in poverty. We went down to a report, and that report is getting some action again this session. And I hope that I really do support competency education. I think it's the thing of the future, and I'm glad that this will be attention, that the HEC will be paying some attention to this and letting what they come up with to the legislative body. And I hope, appreciate their cooperation in getting this bill.
Well, I appreciate Representative Wisnett's flexibility on this, and in my mind, it no way diminishes the work that's being done. It's important work, and appreciate that.
Bob, there's only one name here that anyone on the committee wants to sign on.
Okay.
I don't need to go solo on this.
Okay. We're all making the pitch today. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call a roll.
Aye.
Representative
Clegg?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Reschke?
Aye.
Representative Sullivan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lanzillon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Erden?
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent as amended to the floor. And Rep. Wisnett, would you be kind enough to carry that?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3289. Okay. We're just gonna. You want to come? Opening. So I need to open a work session, all right? I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2313. This is a bill on accelerated college credits, and there's been late-breaking inspiration to integrate this with the transfer work that's being done. And so I want to carry this over then to a later date,
okay.
Not far off. Thursday or Tuesday?
One of the two, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to try for Thursday.
Okay.
I'm going to try for Thursday, which is the 13th, right?
What's the other bill?
So we'll carry it over to April 13th, and I'm closing work session on House Bill 2313.
Solomon has a question.
Just had a question.
Oh.
What was the? Do you know the bill number? The other one? No, not 2313, but the other one.
The other bill is the transfer bill. That's Laura would know.
It's House Bill 2998.
2998. We'll hear on Thursday.
Thank you.
Okay, are we done? We be done? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee. Good work, everybody. Good committee. Good work, everybody. Higher Ed and Workforce Development.